This is a Pentecost letter addressed to two little girls, but written for all of us. Dear Madeline and Magnolia, happy Pentecost and welcome to the church. You're going to be baptized this morning, a big day for you and your family and this community. And you're so little that you'll probably forget every minute of it. So I offer you this homily to help you remember this day and the promises that we will make on your behalf. It hasn't occurred to you yet, but one day you'll wonder about the meaning of creation and your place in it. Who am I? What difference does my life make? What happens when I die or lose someone I love? If we do our job well here at Redeemer, if we honor your questions, share our heroes and heroines with you, and tell you our own stories of faith and fear, then you'll be prepared when things fall apart or whenever a challenge demands your best efforts. When you're hanging on by a fingernail someday, your baptism can help you remember who you are. Who are you? If you're like the rest of us, you'll look to a variety of sources for your answer. Your parents, your friends, your schools, your work, your bank account, your country. In and through all of that, your baptism says that you are God's daughter, first, last, and always. The chaplain at Duke writes, "Through baptism, a Christian first and finally learns who he or she is. It's a rite of identity. Baptism asserts rather than argues, it proclaims rather than explains, it commands rather than requests, it acts rather than signifies, and it involves rather than describes." One day you may ask, "Who in the world am I?" And baptism will answer by having you feel the water dripping from your head and a bit of oil smearing your face. And that tangible memory is designed to help you recall these words: "I am beloved, God's own child, claimed and ordained for some serious business." And what is the business that this community of faith is engaged in? I'll tell you, to welcome the stranger in the lunchroom, at school, or in the street you travel to get there, to strive for justice and peace in concrete and measurable ways, to feed the hungry and clothe the naked and make the world a little bit better for your time here, to look out for the little guy, to love God and your neighbor as yourself by not only picking up the fellow in the ditch, like the old Bible story tells us, but also working together with others to make sure that the road to Jericho, or Baltimore, if you will, is no longer a place of desperation or danger. One priest I know says a lot of life is like sitting in a hospital waiting room. We're all wounded, but some folks are hurt more than others at any given moment, so we need to be especially tender with the ones who are lost and alone. Train your eyes and ears to glimpse God at work in the world. Listen for good news and share it whenever you can. When you learn to read, tackle the stories of the Bible. And as a teenager and an adult, read them in a number of different ways: poetry and myth, history and politics, adventure and family drama. Seek the truth that says that every person and tribe has inherent value and beauty, and break any chains that bind us. Learn to pray. There are a lot of different methods, and you'll have to experiment with several before you land on the one that works for you. Mostly, listen. God is speaking in books and in your dreams and in other people. And keep in mind that God is speaking in the ones that you think might drive you crazy. So especially, listen carefully to them. And learn to look for signs of resurrection, for bits and pieces of new life in the midst of defeat and brokenness and death. This won't be easy. It may hurt quite a lot. You will feel foolish sometimes for being hopeful, and other folks may laugh at you. Do it anyway. The individuals who look for life and love preserve the world. When you're older, a good way to put this into practice is to look someone in the eye and say, "I'd like to know who you are," and mean it. Ask them what they care about, what they've lost, and what gives them hope. And then love the person who's presented to you, whatever they might reveal. God will be very near. Some folks call today the birthday of the church, the moment when a rather scruffy group of Jesus' friends and followers had an experience of God beyond their wildest imaginings. Hundreds of pilgrims had gathered in Jerusalem for the Jewish spring festival of first fruits, which falls 50 days after the celebration of Passover. Devout Jews were expected to gather at the temple with his or her offering, so the streets roared with disparate languages of the Middle East, Northern Africa, and Mesopotamia. It was probably a bit like the food court at Camden Yards, or one of the ramps leading into a Ravens home game, except everyone was going in a different direction, and every announcement over the loudspeaker was garbled and in a language you couldn't understand. And everyone felt a bit lost. And then suddenly a refreshing breeze blew through the dusty streets, and on every corner stood a guide speaking your native tongue. It was the followers of Jesus who made the difference that day, able to communicate with everyone who needed help, and no one was more surprised than they were. It's a story of being lost and confused and then being found and understood, which reverberates to this morning. Whenever two people can push through a wall of difference to find understanding and common ground, God is very real and present. There's a custom at a little church in the Midwest that goes like this. Whenever a person is about to be baptized, the minister calls out to the congregation, "Who stands with this child?" And then the extended family and close friends rise from their seats and offer an outward and physical testimony to their inward commitment. Their hearts, like ours, however broken and limited, long to love like God. And so they stand and commit themselves, eyes brimming and knees shaking. These are the folks in the child's life who know that growing up is not easy these days. People who know that being a parent or a guardian is hard work in the best of circumstances. This custom of folks popping up here and there in the pews whenever there's a baptism makes the church feel warm and cozy, like a family. But I want to warn us from striving for the warmth of sentimentality, even on a day like this, and caution us from building a church in which everyone knows each other whenever we gather. That works for clubs, but not for the church, which at its best has strangers and misfits and scruffy seekers arriving always. The church is more than a family. The measure of a church is not that it can gather amiable people who are willing to stand for their neighbors. Rather, the church is truly built when opponents break bread together, when one broken-hearted outcast stands up for another, when a queen kneels before a poor unwed mother or recovering addict and calls her sister. Our litmus test is not blood, but the spirit, and we're building something more lasting and healing than the bonds of biology. A child named Matthew was presented for baptism at an Episcopal church a few years back, and I imagine a group of folks stood to support him and his family as they gathered around the font. But that same Matthew, child of God, was beaten and left for dead as a young man, tied to a fence post like yesterday's garbage because his way of being challenged some people's idea of family values. He loved the wrong person, and that made some people mad. So one dark night, two very scared young men, also God's children, acted out of their own fears and those of the majority around them, and that fear, left unchecked, turned murderous. I would not defend their actions, but I would understand it if Matthew's parents had settled into their own murderous rage, mirroring the worst of their son's killer, looking for vengeance, an eye for an eye. I wouldn't defend it, but I would understand it as a human being and a father. It's a sad fact that each of us is capable of the worst kind of treachery. But Matthew's parents did something different, something extraordinary. They asked for their son's killer to be spared. They stepped beyond the narrow circle of family, of blood, into the family of spirit, and saw a brother and another son looking back at them through the eyes of their enemy. Jesus began talking about this new way of being in the world, God's hope for for human society over 2,000 years ago. He cut through every excuse and barrier and said, feed each other, teach each other, listen to each other, love each other. His is a bracing wind of solidarity and power and healing, like the spirit of understanding that burned in that crowd on Pentecost long ago. Brokenhearted, Matthew's parents let themselves feel a bit of that spirit and then inch toward healing and forgiveness. And that same spirit of courage and compassion is what stirs up the waters of baptism for you and for the rest of us today. Pray we then, O Lord the Spirit, on our lives descend in might. Let your flame break out within us, fire our hearts and clear our sight, till white hot in your possession we too set the world alight.